your garden today, you may take a beer with you. But have you ever thought about making beer a part of your garden? It's the one area in which weeds may actually work for you. The Norfolk Botanical Garden is collaborating with Norfolk's O'Connor Brewing Company to create a brand new grain and hops garden set to open next month. Our garden guru, Jim Orban, joins us along with a live studio audience here at the Norfolk Botanical Gardens. We're back after this news from NPR. Jim Orban, good to see you. Thank you for being. Was that awesome? We both had a transporting moment there, didn't we? I mean, really.
First of all,
we are here on the 22nd day of September, which is right after the 21st night of September.
How about that?
Memorialized, honored by Earth, Wind, and Fire.
As well as the first day of the equinox.
I knew that. I got my cards out last week.
As well as, look at this audience.
Oh, this is the best thing. We have a mass. Hundreds of people are here at the Norfolk Botanical Garden.
That's it.
Hundreds of people.
Literally thousands.
Thousands. We had to get crowd control and parking attendance. So there it is. We're awfully glad, everybody. We really do seriously have about, what, 50 people, something like that, here in the Camellia classroom at the Norfolk Botanical Garden. We're awfully glad to see you here. We have the two Anns, who are master gardeners, who came all the way down from Newport News. We're glad to have you here. And then, what is your name, ma'am? Joyce from Gloucester came all the way down from Gloucester to join us today. So that's great.
That's a following.
It's a thing. It's an experience. I'm telling you, I think we should go on tour. We could get those tour jackets.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? And have some food. I see a future.
You have a vision.
I have a vision.
You have a vision.
Speaking of visions, did anybody have a vision of anything other than rain for the last month and a half?
Oh, my gosh. I heard a disc jockey this morning talking about it. All we need is 35 more days.
Yeah, that's a fact.
We'll be getting it.
I'm telling you, it's been a long time since I've seen the kind of rain that we had and the effects that it had. I think a lot of people who live in areas that traditionally flood maybe didn't have so much problem, but a lot of areas that don't traditionally flood are really stranded. Some communities out in Chesapeake, some communities in Virginia Beach, so...
You bet.
It's been quite a time.
I know that Brian warned me coming in that I might not pass on Azalea Garden Roads because it was so.
Yeah, the water is quite high.
Spilling over.
Indeed. Brian O'Neill, the Director of Horticulture here at the Norfolk Botanical Garden. Nice to see you again, Brian. Thank you for being here today.
Nice to see you all.
That water is pretty high out there. High tide, I think, this afternoon at 156, 130-ish.
Look at you.
I'm all about the tides.
Yeah, okay.
All about the tides.
I live for the tides.
No? Okay. I live for the tides. That's how it is. So, Brian, is water much of an issue? I mean, is water typically much of an issue here, or is it just in these moments where we have a pretty steady rain that just seems to center on the region?
Well, oftentimes the lack of water is an issue here. We're always watering, and we were watering up until this recent event. But now we've got more areas of the garden flooded deeper than we've ever seen.
Really? Wow. But at least you don't have to water for a while.
That's right.
I suppose there's always an upside, is there not? So what's going on at the garden these days? You just finished a great, great summer. Love the bike program. A lot of people came out to participate in that.
Well, horticulturally, the garden is the best it's ever been. It's had a long summer. We've had lots of rain. The plants are at their maximum.
Beautiful.
We're about getting ready in the middle of October to start changing out our summer displays for winter displays. So that will be coming up. But it's been a great year, I think, for us overall.
Beautiful, beautiful. What a great place this is. We're glad to have Lauren Tafoya with us as well. She is the official butterfly grower at the garden, and she's a member of the Butterfly Society of Virginia. Nice to see you, Lauren, and thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
We have, by the way, on our Facebook page, I think that video is up. We just before the show, you were kind enough to allow us to go outside and release some monarch butterflies, which was an amazing experience. So that video is at our Facebook page if you'd like to see that. Tell us about that program.
Well, the monarch tagging is seasonal event in that monarchs don't begin their migration until mid-September. Monarchs that are here with us for the summer never migrate. They are reproductive. They stay in the garden. And it's the monarchs that emerge from their chrysalis or pupa here in the Tidewater region after September 15th that are behaviorally as well as biologically different. They are migrators. They're the ones that are going to make that one-way journey to Mexico, hibernate, or it's called diapause in those forests, and then make a short return in the spring only as far as Texas. They're then reproductive, and then we have the sequential generations that make it back to us. So here in Norfolk, when we see monarchs in spring, usually in May or June, they're the great-grandchildren of those that are making this one-way journey down.
Wow, that's amazing. And so you put little tags on them, and we should note these are not tags you buy at the office, Max. These are they're really tiny little white stickers, and I was so surprised by that. And, Jim, I think we chatted about this.
We did.
It had their wings seem so weak or fragile. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very specific, isn't it?
So how do you do that? I mean, it feels like something that you would damage their wings when you put a sticker on them.
Well, butterfly wings are not as fragile as one thinks. The fragility is in the loss of scales. And as long as you're handling them carefully and not removing their scales, you're really not harming their wings in any way.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It's their exoskeleton, and there is a rigidness to them. Again, it's the loss of scales that affects the butterfly's flight. So if you handle them properly, they're fine. These stickers were specifically designed for this purpose of tracking. They're complete with a website as well as an 800 number. And there are groups that all along the migration route are looking for tagged monarchs as data points. So here at the Botanical Garden, we are tagging 600 monarchs as part of this research study done from the University of Kansas Monarch Watch. And then the Butterfly Society will tag an additional 500 over the next 2 weeks at other events. So in total, we're going to be giving a data point for at least 1,100 monarchs.
That's amazing. And so these people who track them along the way, what are they looking for, and where are they reporting this information?
All right. The particular group that we're working with, again, is Monarch Watch, uh-huh, out of the University of Kansas, and they've been tagging for 25 years. Wow. Part of it is the study of what affects their migration, wind and weather, the route that they're actually taking. We have learned over time that all butterflies that are tagged on that through the eastern states have never been found on the west side of the Appalachian Mountains. So we know that those monarchs are making a direct southward flight and making a right-hand turn at the end of the mountain range and either going across the Gulf States or the Gulf waters, catching thermals along the way. They're actually putting on body fat by nectaring, and they're getting heavier so that they can sustain themselves for that state of diapause, which lasts about 3 months.
And you were taking one out, Jim, and it was a great moment because you said, maybe this one is ill or something like that, mm-hmm, because...
But a lot of times what they were doing is just warming up, pretty much, allowing their wings to open up so that, in fact, they can capture the energy of the sun, warm them up, and then they will take flight.
So we shouldn't be alarmed when we see something like that, because that is indeed, could be very well what's happening.
That's usually what's happening. I mean, there are butterflies that have weaknesses, just like any other. Mm-hmm. They can catch diseases and have conditions that are going to make them not able to make the journey, quite honestly.
Right.
But those that we were releasing earlier, it's been cool for the last 2 days, and they have not had the warmth of the sun to engage their flight muscles.
Yeah.
So they were basking and trying to draw heat into their bodies so that they could begin their flight. But most of them today, since it's still gray and cloudy, are going to stay here in the garden.
Nice.
They're going to nectar on all these fabulous, beautiful flowers that are everywhere. They're going to put on that first, few pounds or ounces.
This is like the golden corral for the butterflies,
it
right?
It really
like
is.
A whole buffet.
There is
going
such
on.
A selection that they can go to outside. It's just amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I tell you, by the way, if you're wondering why I'm not giving the phone numbers, it's because we're not taking calls today because we have a live studio audience. So if anybody has questions here, you are welcome to raise your hand. And Morgan, everybody's very excited to meet you, Morgan. That's kind of cool. That's kind of cool. We bring him out
not
every now and again.
Not as excited as I am.
I know. There you go. But he will come to you with the microphone. But if you're at home or if you're in your car or whatever, when you get to a safe spot, you can also post on Facebook your questions, And also on Twitter at Kathy Lewis Talks. And so please, there no truer words were ever spoken. So there you have it. We're glad to be coming to you live today from the Norfolk Botanical Garden. It's a day of beer and roses. Lauren Tafoya, thank you so much for being with us today. That was so interesting to do. And I think we're going to maybe get an opportunity to tag a monarch or two afterwards.
As before we depart.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. I know. Me too. Me too. And Brian O'Neill, thank you so much for being back with us today. We had the greatest tour with Brian last time we were here. Do you remember that?
I do.
Because it was cold.
And you probably remember going on this back patio when we were there.
Yes.
And what a transformation has happened since
no
May.
No kidding.
What a plethora.
Yeah.
Plant
did you just say plethora?
I did. I'm sorry.
Hang on.
I was looking that one up before we got here.
I was going to say. I was like, that was impressive.
How did Jim find that dictionary?
I know. It's like a crossword puzzle word right there.
Gosh.
I'm kind of impressed with that. All right, we are coming up on 16.
In that word, wasn't it?
That was very public broadcasting of you. Well done. We're at 16 minutes past the hour. Jim Orban with us live, as he is once a month at this time, when we talk about what's going on in your garden. Wondering, you know, I'm telling you, I think today people are just interested in getting drained out, getting their garden drained out. It is a mess out there. Any of you all have flooding at your homes or just high water? Yeah, lots of folks. So it is what it is for the moment. But the weather should be clearing up this afternoon. We know that the weather for the weekend, it looks pretty good, certainly better than it has. So that's going to be something to look forward to. A little bit later, we're going to talk to Christina Besenson. She's an assistant professor of horticulture at Tidewater Community College. I didn't even know Tidewater had a horticulture program. And we have some students here today from that program, which we're excited about. So we will talk with her about that. They have a number of programs in horticulture that will really match the time that you have available to commit to it.
For sure. And there's so many, you know, when folks think of horticulture, they just think a bunch of people growing plants, but there are so many disciplines within the degree of horticulture that's
really
we're gonna find really you sound amazed.
I am shocked and amazed indeed.
Yes.
And then a little bit later we'll hear from Mal Vinson. He's remembering Edward Albee, of course, the Pulitzer Prize winning American playwright who passed away earlier this month at the age of 88. And so we'll hear from Mal just a bit later. First though, it is time to talk about beer. It's true.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. So that's the applause line. I love that.
Like, yeah, we're talking about beer. That's awesome.
So there's a very interesting thing happening here at the Norfolk Botanical Garden, and it is a grain and hop garden. We're glad to have Alexandra Cantwell with us today, who's a horticulturist here at the Botanical Garden. She's really been the driving force behind this thing. Nice to have you with us today.
Yeah, it's nice to be here.
Yeah, and we're also glad to have back with us today Kevin O'Connor, the owner of O'Connor Brewing Company and a local, increasingly famous brewer. Kevin, nice to have you with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me back.
And you're welcome. And Bob Sweeney's here as well, and he is a production brewer. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
So tell us how this whole thing came about. Alexandra, this was really kind of your brainchild, wasn't it?
Yeah, I started in horticulture here about almost 2 years ago, and then started working at O'Connor's in their tasting room about a year and a half ago, and it was always kind of in the back of my mind how I was like, we can grow the things we could brew at the garden, and then Kevin approached me maybe a few months, 6 months ago or so, and asked how to make that happen. So,
wow.
Yeah, I was pretty excited that I had the support from both jobs to
that's kind of a nice deal. You are working that gig economy, girl. Well done. So this is the O'Connor Grain and Hop Garden, the grand opening thereof, October 15th next month from 9 to 5. It's going to be a whole day of super fun stuff. Kevin O'Connor, tell me what was interesting to you about this idea.
You know, as I always talked about doing as much as I can for the community.
You're very generous in that way.
Well, I appreciate that. We can't do a farm brewery in the location we are in, and knowing her, Alex's green thumb and her excitement about plants that I really don't have, you know, it turned into something like, you know, this is something we could probably do, and again, community-wise, to partner with her other job with Norfolk Botanical Gardens and really come up with an idea that, you know, utilizing things that are grown right here in the garden to make small batches, and who knows, maybe bigger batches as we go. But then looking at a way to take something and really turn it into an educational thing where people can come in here and see the grain, the hops, and other items that we can use in beer that are obviously planted here inside the garden and going with that. She has taken the reins on this because, again, I would probably kill everything out here if I got loose on it. But yeah. I'm good about cutting grass. That's about it.
Yeah, that's all it is. Huh?
But it's fun, and I think the community coming in here and showing one more thing, like an exhibit size, with the botanical gardens, I think it's going to be great. I think it's, you know, the cross promotions we can do is going to be great. So
and so Bob Sweeney, we talked about hops. What exactly is that? I mean, we keep hearing that term around brewing. I'm not even sure I know what it is. Maybe I'm the only one though. That's possible.
Well, a hop is a flower that grows on a vine. The vines can grow up to 30 feet high. They produce probably a few pounds per vine, and that's where you get a lot of flavor and aroma in the beer, as well as the bittering compound.
Wow. And so, Alexandra, are there different kinds of hops and grains that you're going to be growing here?
Right now we've got three different types of hops, Centennial, Chinook, and Nugget. We've actually harvested small amounts of the Chinook hops.
There's a variety.
There's
a variety.
Humulus lupulus, the scientific name of the hops. But we've used some of the Nugget hops and the Chinook hops already at the brewery in very small batches, which is pretty exciting for a first year. They take about 3 years to mature.
Yeah. What surprised you about this process? Because you know, it's one thing to have a great idea, and boy, did you ever. But it's another thing to put it into practice. So what has surprised you along the way?
Honestly, I think the support from people all across the board. Not that I wasn't expecting it, but everyone was much more enthusiastic about it than I thought they would be.
Good, good.
So it made it fairly easy, kind of.
Good. Kevin, how about you? Because you've had the business that you're such a genius at this beer thing and been so instrumental in creating a company that's really supported the beer culture and grown so much more of the beer culture. What's surprised you along the way?
Well, first of all, you put me in kind of a high altitude position right now. You know, when we set out to do this, I mean, there's other people that are helping us out with this right now. Copper Fox, which is really a distillery, but they also have a malting group. It's a local Virginia grain supplier, which we make some beers with right now. So they partnered with us, so that was a good position. And then our contractors that helped us build out our building right now, Space Makers, also helped us with the construction of the hop garden. So it wasn't just us getting everything done. We had a lot of help, again, with those two entities. But, you know, again, one of the things that we were looking at right now, and hopefully in years to come, this thing grows into something bigger. It is, again, to show more educational side.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, to grow the idea of craft right here in Norfolk. Mm,
that every piece of the process has that craft piece to it.
Correct.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point.
As well, a lot of the folks who are selling food, and it's all shop local, buy local.
Correct.
Which is a really good idea. Have you found any problems as far as producing the hops with invasiveness going on because they are rhizomes?
That's why you're here.
So these are first-year rhizomes. They came in. They were about the size of pencils. We grew them on in the nursery. They're very vigorous growers.
Oh, yeah.
So far, we're kind of letting them flush out and bulk up, but we'll prune them back, kind of tame them, and then next year I think they'll be okay, but if not, we can divide them. And if we divide them, then it either gives us the opportunity something to sell, or we can just get rid of the material. But it's a very controlled environment out there, so I think we'll be
okay. So are you full-time here? So you're full-time here, and you work at O'Connor's?
Yeah, I work there part-time.
Wow, I'm impressed.
How about that?
So I hope I'm not going to spoil the big reveal.
You hope you're not going to spoil the big reveal?
Of what beers are coming up with the Grain and Hop Garden, because probably is the one on the Hearsay team who drinks the most beer.
I would say that is a fact.
Yeah, that's probably true. Not in studio though, if anyone's curious.
Never in working hours, that's correct.
I was curious what made you select those three hops. Was it a question of, were you planning those for like local climate and how well they were going to grow, or did you have beers in mind specifically that you were tailoring to, and what sort of beers are you going to be putting those ingredients into?
Or did you telepathically pick up on Morgan's deepest desire? That's possible, too.
I can speak to the hops. I went with ones that are more disease resistant. Downy mildew specifically is a big problem we have with hops. They're traditionally grown in the Pacific Northwest due to the climate. It's a little too humid here. It's the hotter end of the spectrum as well, but they do grow here. So I just chose varieties that were more resistant to the disease problems we would have. And then I was talking to the brewers, and they seemed to like the varieties we chose. I guess you guys can speak to the beer that we'll brew.
Yeah, so we've already, with this year's harvest, we've made two pale ales. They're nice, light, crisp beers. We're actually serving one tonight at the brewery, and then we'll be bringing another one for the opening of the garden.
Can you reveal the name? If you can,
it's okay. Do you want to make one up right now?
Just make it up right now. That's how it happens, right?
Yeah. Kathy Lewis Pale.
Oh, yeah, right. There we go. There we go. That will be sure to sell. I'm still confident about that. But what an exciting thing here.
NBG special.
Yeah,
right?
The NBG. Yeah. That's a good
the
one.
NBG
yeah.
special.
Like there that. Like that.
Botanical beer.
Yeah, botanical beer.
Mm-hmm.
Alexandra, you are smart. I like that. So as you see this program growing and developing, when the public comes in to take a look, what are they going to be able to see exactly?
Well, instead of doing the typical straight line trellis system, Alex really put her brain behind it and created this kind of like teepee effect. So as they get more and more developed, you're going to really be able to walk under in.
Oh, wow.
Which, I mean, again, I'm not pushing towards the younger generation, but it's going to allow you to walk through
nice.
and get underneath and look at it. And the way she designed the grain to go around it, it's going to be very interactive to walk around.
Beautiful.
Almost kind of like to me, it looks like an Elizabethan garden style.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it's close to their potager garden, all the edibles. And I think that's where I kind of fell in love with it when we came over here, Bob, myself, and Alex, and Michael over here. Mm-hmm. We looked around and, you know, we were just picking plants and putting it in our mouth. And I was like, wow, this is really cool, you know,
it's
that
amazing.
we can take some of the, I fell in love, what was it?
Lemon thyme.
Lemon thyme.
Yeah.
I thought that'd be really cool to make a beer like that. But the space, and I don't want to say it was a vacant space that was never going to get utilized, but it was perfect because it's right off one of the tram places.
Uh-huh.
And again, right next to the potager garden. So they have the ability to go from one side to the next, and in a really good space for us to set up a tent and maybe do some beer tastings out there and hopefully grow it where other breweries can participate with us and really make more of the communal sense.
That's, I think, one of the things I really appreciated about the beer culture is it is very – let me rephrase that. What I mean is they're very generous with – I mean, I think in a lot of businesses you would think of other people in the business as your competitors, and certainly they are to some extent competitors. But by the same token, I think you all are – all that whole beer
venture.
Community, very cooperative.
Very cooperative.
Which I think makes a difference in creating the culture – that's really growing in the region.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, we can all sit back and enjoy a beer together. So it's not, you know, everybody's doing their own thing, and we get along with everybody.
But it sounds like this is not only functional, but ornamental. Very ornamental. In a very ornamental garden, it's flowers and plants and trees and shrubs, that you've kept that theme going on in this garden to make it ornamental mm-hmm. as well as functional.
I tell you, you're going to be able to see it on October 15th. This is going to be so much fun. It's on Saturday. Y'all are going to – even you, Joyce, from Gloucester, will want to come back from this. This is a day of beer and roses. I love that. And so what they're going to be having is the War of the Roses, which is a CrossFit benefit workout. Have y'all heard about the CrossFit? Whoa, that's some very serious working out, isn't it? I'm going to come watch that. And then I feel that will have some sort of ancillary benefit, right? If I put my eyes on and just watch it, maybe something will happen. And then you're going to
cheer them on, I'm sure.
Right.
Not only watch, but you'll dip.
Absolutely. And then you're going to get the opportunity to visit the new grain and hop garden, learn about the brewing process right here at the Norfolk Botanical Garden. You're going to get some beer from O'Connor Brewing Company. That'll be great. Live music, a day of activities, very family friendly. So that's coming up. Saturday, October 15th, a day of beer and roses.
Michelle from Virginia Beach joins us in studio with a question.
Great. Hi, Michelle. Oh,
hi. My question is for Alexandra. For a home gardener on a design standpoint,
Are hops a great vine to have? Are they too tall in their, you know, over the years? Do they get too messy? Mm-hmm. How would you recommend for a residential design to use them? Well, shade garden, sunny, what is it?
They do prefer sun. They are a very, very vigorous grower. The varieties that we brew with, definitely, he said, 30 feet. There are ornamental varieties, though, that aren't quite as large or aggressive. But one thing I've done before with homeowners and that were very passionate about beer and wanted to grow hops, if you have trellises or like an arbor or something covering a deck, in the summer you can have it grow up, provide shade, and then it's a perennial vine. So in the winter you can cut it back and you'll get that sun back on your deck. But you do have to divide the rhizomes. Again, it's an aggressive plant. And then they do need sun and lots of water. So,
Are you thinking about doing that, Michelle?
Yeah, I have a couple of clients that need some trellis work, and it's
nice.
I've been thinking about hops, so it seemed like a good time to ask.
Now, was your home down? Was your home flooded out? Did you have a lot of flooding?
Fortunately, not. And I'm down in the municipal center area of Virginia Beach,
right?
So
a lot of areas down
area
there
got
did.
Flooded,
yeah, so
I just stayed put.
I'm happy for you. Well done. All right, we'll look forward
in
to
my backyard. In my rain gauge.
Wow, we'll look forward to seeing those hops and gardens that you design near you.
It'd be fun.
Thank you. We're at 29 minutes before the hour, and you're tuned to a live edition of Hearsay. It's a garden edition of Hearsay. We are here with a cast of thousands at the Botanical Garden. How do I make this sound?
Most recent count.
And it's growing by the minute, so really. Because people are hearing and driving, just going right off the highway and coming over here. So I'm telling you, if we do these live and we put a food truck on it, we will not be able to contain the crowds and the excitement.
They're coming in their boats.
It's true. They could have come in their boats yesterday. I'm not kidding you. Go ahead. Go ahead, please, Miss Lauren.
All right. Well, I have a comment rather than a question.
Okay.
And that's hops is a host plant to a species of butterfly. And by host plant, we mean the larva food for a caterpillar. So every butterfly needs to lay eggs on a specific plant. So if you put hops in your garden, you are going to introduce the question mark and the comma as the butterflies will come because that's the food plant that their caterpillars need to eat.
So that's a good thing.
So that's
and
a
I've
very
seen
good
them
thing.
At the garden.
Really?
Yep. I just talked to Lauren about it. So they lay their eggs underneath the leaves. And as we were harvesting the hops, we were picking them each off by hand. We saw the butterflies frequenting the vines, so it was kind of cool to see in action.
Wow. It's that whole circle of life thing.
It's habitat, too.
Yeah. It's that called mutual benefit.
Yeah, there you go.
The plants. Yeah.
That's very cool. Do you grow hops at your
I have not.
At our estate in Yorktown?
No, our master gardeners have grown them in the learning garden, and they will produce some shade for you. So
really?
Yeah. If, you know, the way I've seen hops, you know, especially if you're an ornamental gardener and you lose a tree or a plant that's been providing shade to a garden, that might be something for a quick one. A lot of folks will use castor bean plant to fill in, to get high so that it provides a shade for the plants. So that might be another option for hops.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Well, I wish you all tremendous success. Alexandra Cantwell, good for you. They're lucky to have you here at the Norfolk Botanical Garden. And so this I like. This is the story of a young woman who's thinking, all the time thinking, and bringing her two employers together in a strategy that will assure that she never loses either job. So I think that's very impressive. Yeah, because what are they going to do now? I mean, she's bringing it. She is bringing value every day.
Every day. You bet.
Thank you for being with us today. I appreciate it. Kevin O'Connor, great to see you again. And
good
thank
you
for being here. Thanks for what you're doing on the 15th. And Bob Sweeney, congratulations on all of the success. And I hope that you brew on, my friend. Thank you for being here. So then this is the day of Beer and Roses. Very creative design for the marketing folks.
It is.
Saturday, October 15th, right here at the Botanical Garden. Again, you'll be enjoying beer by O'Connor Brewing Company. That's worth the price right there. Live music, activities, loads of stuff going on. You can register if you are so inclined for the War of the Roses, which is a CrossFit benefit workout. Or you can just come and watch, which is also something you could do. And you can visit the new Grain and Hop Garden to learn about this brewing process, which is a really, really interesting bringing together of a number of worlds.
It is. And kind of new for us in horticulture.
Yeah.
Because usually in horticulture, you're not mixing production with ornamentals.
Oh.
And this is definitely mixing up,
So
viable,
what you're saying
sustainable,
is mind blown.
Mind, right.
Right?
All the time.
All the time.
All the time.
All the time.
Very good.
So I know, and with all due respect, Jim Morvanda, and there's just a great horticulture. You know, I have to say one good thing about tech. There is a great...
written down right there?
A great horticulture program at Tech from which you are one of the most distinguished graduates, no question about
Thank
it.
Thank you.
And you have been affiliated with that program for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
But now in Hampton Roads at Tidewater Community College, there is a horticulture program that people may not know that much about.
They might not. A lot of us who are in horticulture do because these folks enter our trade and they work with us and all that. But I am so glad that Christina could be here with us today to talk with us about the horticulture program there at Tidewater. I got to watch myself because we have Thomas Nelson on our side of the water, and you guys are Tidewater Community College.
Christina Bazanza, nice to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I think a lot of people may not realize that's a very good point you just raised, though, about the Thomas Nelson and the
Tidewater. Yeah.
Because I did not know this, so I share this with you.
That's dyslexia,
so you
people.
You can just throw this into conversation before the end of the day, and people will be, man, I can't believe you knew that. The community college system is uncompetitive in the respect that Tidewater Community College serves the south side of Hampton Roads, Thomas Nelson serves the peninsula, mm-hmm. and they don't, you know, they don't compete. Rappahannock, and so they've done a good job, I think, of dividing up the Commonwealth and saying, mm-hmm. look, this is your plot of ground. You till it. You do whatever you have to do. But isn't that
very
good?
I just threw
that. Did you see how I did that?
I did. Yeah. I saw it. It was
so I'm making
good.
A big public broadcasting
That's
dollars
why you make
here.
What you make. Right?
That's what I'm talking about. Christina, nice to have you with us. How old is the horticulture program at TCC?
It's been around for maybe 35 34 years.
The
it's
best
been
kept
here.
Secret.
Yes.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. I may be the only one who didn't know about it.
I'm a short timer. I've only been here 5 years.
Wow. And so what are the options? Because I think, you know, when people contemplate either a career enhancement or a career change, they want to know what kind of time commitment they're talking about.
We have a wonderful 2-year Associates in Applied Science Horticulture degree. Students could go on to a 4-year degree after this, such as Virginia Tech, NC State.
And you know, the deal is if you do 2 years at a community college and you do well, you get to go where, you know, from here you can go anywhere. That's what they say anyway.
Other options we have are our career study certificates. And these are for folks who may already be working professionals in horticulture and they're trying to upgrade their skills or study a certain aspect of horticulture that they need some more skills in. Those three are landscape design, landscape management, and plant production.
Wow, so lots of opportunities. Jim, you were saying a lot of people don't realize the variety of educational opportunities within the sort of the horticulture umbrella and what you might go for. Walk some of those through.
Sure. I don't think you guys have it over TCC, but if you're talking about horticulture, I mean, there's floriculture, you know, a lot of floristry type of, and even within that field, there are spinoffs. Then there's olericulture. That's right up there with plethora.
I was just going to say, you have lost me.
Olericulture is the study of vegetable growing. And that career field, you know, people think about vegetable growing just in their own vegetable gardens. But we're talking about large companies like Libby's, Green Giant, hiring horticulturists who can grow thousands of acres of just green beans.
And put them in the cans.
But more or less, kind of like what Alex was talking about, selecting the specific varieties that are going to can well, ship well, all those kinds of things. Then there's pomology, which is the study of fruits, it's a fruits and vegetables major, which is what I was at Tech. That's
really?
Why I could talk about this stuff. And then there's nursery management, there's nursery production, there's landscape design and install. I mean, gosh.
It's complicated.
We like to make
complex.
It sound that way. It increases the salary.
I hear you.
When you
I know.
Make it confusing,
See,
right?
This is what I think is so interesting. So many of us think we can do, you know, we can do this in our own yards, and there's a great extent to which I suppose we can. But we should note, I mean, there are people who really know what they're doing and know what because a lot of our calls we get from listeners are, I can't believe how tall this plant got. Mm. And the fact of the matter is, if you work with somebody who understands this stuff, you might not have planted that plant to start with, because they're going to know how tall it's going to get and how deep the root system is.
Very much so. And you know, to some folks' defense, I would say sometimes the plant doesn't read the book, because the plant, you know,
on plants.
You know, Durr might say, I've seen plants. Durr is a very well-known ornamental horticulturist. But he might have said, I've seen this plant only get 20, 25 feet, and then you experience the plant being up at 30, 35
yeah.
feet. So a lot of
so
times.
So there are variations.
So we really yeah. do like to grow the plants ourselves yeah. to make sure that we know exactly how tall it gets.
So we have students here today from the Tidewater
we
Community
do.
College Horticulture Program. Raise your hand if you are one of said students. Thank you for being here
oh
today.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you.
So here's the thing, and I don't know if you are aware of this, but Christina Bazanson said that anybody who asks a question gets 10 extra credit points. So, you know, so
there
it is.
I wish it was a beer from O'Connor's.
I know. Yeah, they might actually do better with that. That's a fair enough question. So does anybody, yes, ma'am, and then we'll come to the back. Yes, ma'am.
We have a question from Kim from Chesapeake.
Yes, Christina, I'm wondering, as I was going through high school, I thought that a lot of the kids had the idea that they went into horticulture, that they were going to be cutting grass and doing manual labor. Can you tell me what kind of careers students can hope to achieve when they get their associates?
Yeah, again, as Jim was pointing out, there are so many opportunities for someone who studies horticulture. There's some folks who just work in a lab, and they may be looking at insects, disease, new, again, cultivars of delicious hops mm-hmm. that could be working on. Folks can go into the design field. That's where you're really combining art and science and working with computers and drawing up landscape plans, working in a big firm. Other folks can go towards the nursery or garden center, botanical garden. I think we have a few folks
right.
in the audience right here that are wearing their botanical garden shirts that are also graduates of our program.
So lots of opportunities beyond mowing the lawn.
Horticulture therapy is another big one where a lot of students will come in.
They what is horticulture therapy?
If you want to maybe work in a nursing home and work with folks on growing plants and indoor gardening to help calm people down
yeah.
and give them something to do to take care of. They may not be able to have a pet in a nursing home,
right.
but if they have a plant that they're caring for and then can eat it after, that's very satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a beautiful thing.
Or they might be doing some ornamental arrangings.
Yes,
actually taking floriculture plants mm-hmm. and putting them together into arrangements.
Yeah, right now some of our students are growing mums and poinsettias, getting ready for the fall and Christmas time. We actually have plant sales that we have at the greenhouse. Our classes are at the Chesapeake campus of Tidewater.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. I know that Hannah Martin, our production associate, is going to be stunned to know that I did actually just in this moment take a picture of our live studio audience and post it to Facebook all at the same time.
I am so proud of you.
All thousand?
Awesome.
I know. Well, this is
all
a
thousands.
Subset. This is a subset. This is all we could fit in the room. The hallways are stacked up. So they're all the way out to the Rose Garden.
Your next question is coming from Don from Norfolk.
Okay. Hi, Don.
I have a fairly big backyard, and I have one spot that's probably about as half as this room. I call it my botanical garden, which I don't
well
know exactly what everything is in there.
Yeah.
But my question is, I want to go back to the young lady who said about the hops.
Yes.
And growing them for butterflies. I have about 3 or 4 butterfly bushes, which attracts a lot of butterflies. But I'm more interested in getting more and feeding them caterpillars. So what type of, is it any type of hop that you can plant to attract that? Or is it a certain kind?
I'm going to run around with the mic.
All right, we're going to run around with the mic and find that out. All right, here we go.
All right, when it's hops, it can be any kind of hops that will attract that particular species. Remember I said earlier, every species of butterfly needs a different plant for egg laying. So there's a whole list, and if you go to the website for the Butterfly Society of Virginia, it'll give you a list with the specifics. Monarchs need milkweed. black swallowtails need anything in the carrot family. So what you need to plant to attract the butterfly and make them stay. A flower will bring it in, but if you want it to move in, you need to give it the right plant.
Wow, this is complex.
It is. I'll give it up here.
Bring it on.
You know, I know the plants that are out there, and I cultivate plants. And anybody, any animal who wants to is welcome to come into the garden.
Except the deer.
Yeah. Right. Because they consume too much.
Yeah.
And quickly.
Yeah.
But folks will, when I was an extension agent, folks would say, Jim, what snake is that? I don't know. What frog is that? Yeah,
no,
frog is that? What does this butterfly feed on? What does this one? And I did not know those answers. So butterfliesofvirginia.org is what I would look up, or NPS is what I would look up, because I really don't want to consume that information. I only have so much storage space up there, and I'm not remembering it at all anymore.
But that's a great point that all of this has become very specialized. So, and there are options, a lot of options where you can research specific species and specific plants that will do exactly what you want to do, Don.
Exactly.
Is that good for you, though? I like the way you're thinking about that. That's fantastic.
It is.
We are coming up on 14 minutes before the hour, and we are here at the Norfolk Botanical Garden. We are celebrating on October 15th the grand opening of the O'Connor Grain and Hop Garden. We're talking about the horticulture programs at Tidewater Community College, which is a great option, particularly for folks who may have gotten really interested in gardening as a result of having gone through the Master Gardeners program. We have the Anns with us today from Newport News. Would you all be willing to talk to us about your own Master Garden experience and what that was like for you? Oh my goodness, they look like we look at the talking about the deer.
They're
in
thing,
the headlights right there. That's what
did
I'm talking about.
Did you take that picture?
I should have. That was a shocked look.
Well, I took the class in 2009.
Okay. Hang on one second, Ann. We're going to get your sound on.
We're going to do on.
Yeah,
I took the Master Gardener class in 2009. Uh-huh. And Newport News, Hampton, York County, Gloucester people.
Yeah,
you were my last class.
Yeah. Oh, this is she Ann's one of your students.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wow.
She was in the last. Yeah.
Okay.
Last,
and the main thing I can tell people about the master when they say, "Oh, you're a master gardener," and I say, "Yes. I took the classes."
What is that? What do you mean?
That means that I don't know everything.
Yeah.
There's no way I could ever know everything. But you have to look things up. Jim taught us to research, ask other people. And I just enjoy being outside.
Nice. And there's a service component to Master Gardenering as well, is there not?
Yes, we do. Classes, and part of that is 50 hours of volunteer work for the first to become an intern, and then 20 hours. It's only 20 hours a
year. Sure, yeah.
To maintain.
But I love that requirement.
Garden. Right.
Because there's so many beautiful public gardens where you can put your skills to work.
Right. I enjoy the talking with other gardeners, and we would go to lunch, and here's four women talking about fertilizer.
There you go.
At lunch. You don't find that very often. So met a lot of nice people and recruited friends and told them when you retire, you can do things like this.
Great.
A great program.
I think the title is what she's really emphasizing is that title Master Gardener is very intimidating.
And I can understand that.
Someone says, I'm a master gardener, and then
you
go,
think,
well,
whoa,
they are the master.
Whoa. It starts with the word master for goodness sake.
You bet.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, and thank you for doing
that.
Learning. I really appreciate
it. We're all learning this process. Yeah,
we are. And this is the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like everything in life. Now here we're going in our philosophical 2 minutes of philosophy
okay,
here.
Let's see which way you're going with this one.
So, you know how we've talked about this, about the, you know, gardening is a philosophical mirror of life. We are all always growing. We are all always learning. We are all lifelong learners. And so I think that's what Anna's talking about.
That's what she's doing.
So this is what I'm saying.
And continuing. And I guess what I want to do is point out how Alex and O'Connor came together to
fantastic.
Make this venture work so well, too.
That's great. It's great. Anne, go ahead.
I'm a novice to this, but I just wanted to say that our Newport News
area is doing the community gardens for the food desert.
Yes.
And that's...
How's that going, by the way? That is a great project.
It's an ongoing project. Yeah.
And so if you don't know what a food desert is, that is some neighborhoods in our region are not served by grocery stores. There aren't grocery stores there that have fresh produce fresh. That people can get to. Mm-hmm. So the idea is to create a garden to satisfy that need.
And the Boys and Girls Club, they have community gardens also. That's kind of working with the community.
Yeah. So. And are you engaged in that?
I am not. I am involved in the Children's Educational Grin and Grow at the Riverview Park. Sure. So that's another
excellent.
Well done.
And they do quite a bit with butterflies and nectar-producing plant materials.
We're starting a pollinator.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Someone told me, and I don't know if this is true, that one of the challenges that they have with children now is that children don't necessarily know where their food comes from. You know, they'll see a potato. They have no idea that a potato grows. You know, there's just no connection to it.
But now we know beer comes from hops, right? Hops and grain.
Sure do.
We do know that.
We
okay.
do know that much.
Well, I just want to congratulate the Newport News Master Gardeners on their great Go Expo. Green Expo.
Go Green.
Go
yeah.
Green Expo.
Go Green Expo. Even I knew that.
So much for putting words together.
Yeah, well done. Okay. Well done. All right, so Saturday. Thank you, Ann. Appreciate it. Saturday, October 15th, it's the day of beer and roses here at the Norfolk Botanical Garden. You can watch those people do their CrossFit stuff. It just makes me tired to watch it. And then you can visit that new grain and hop garden. Are you going to be doing the CrossFit?
Well, no. As in preparing for the CrossFit, we could talk about the fact that you can bring your garden into the – I mean, your garden, your bicycle. Into the
Fair
garden.
Fair enough. Excellent
from 4
point.
To 7.
Excellent.
At the Norfolk Botanical Gardens. And that way it gets you around a little bit quicker. And if you just want to see a specific salvia or a specific hydrangea, you can do that.
Indeed. Jim Orban, thank you for being here today.
You bet.
Always great to see you.
Always great to be here.
We are going to take a visit with Mal Vincent now, who remembers Edward Albee, of course, who's the Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright who passed away in September at the age of 88. And we'll be back after we hear from Mal.
Edward Albee was the last great American playwright after Eugene O'Neill, Tennessee Williams, and Arthur Miller. He was a dangerous man. To me, he was a challenge because his prominence as a playwright began at just about the same time I was beginning as a theater critic, and I reviewed his plays. So it's not surprising I would be intimidated by Edward Albee when some 15 years ago I got an interview with him when he came to Norfolk to appear at Old Dominion University's Literary Festival. Who wouldn't be? He was known for not wanting to do interviews, and he had a certain satanic look, deep piercing eyes, and a mustache that reminded me a little of Salvador Dali. My fears, as usual, were not valid. Every person is a human being, and they all like to talk about themselves, including Edward Albee. I think the most important thing he said to me was, quote, "There are some of us who want to create ourselves and others who wish to be whatever they want us to be." That Norfolk meeting was not the first time I met Edward Albee. He was already known as the author of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf on a night when he sat beside me in a Broadway theater. It was entirely by accident. It was the world premiere of his adaptation of the novel Lolita. My seat was one seat from the aisle. Just as the lights dimmed, a man came in and sat in the other seat. I didn't notice him. I was engrossed in Lolita. I didn't notice until the lights came up for the intermission. He looked displeased, and he noted that I had been taking notes. He said only one sentence, "This is not what I wrote," and he left. He did not come back for the second act. Lolita, by the way, was a big flop. If you know Edward Albee at all, you know him because of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. I reviewed when it was first performed locally at the Barksdale Theater at Strawberry Banks in Hampton. A play about a marriage, a deadly threatening play. Martha and George are characters who live forever in our culture, and he confirmed that they are named after the first American royalty, George and Martha Washington. The play was a threat that marriage in itself is a battleground. In the movie version, they were played by Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor.
I give a damn what I do when I'm going to make the biggest explosion you've ever heard.
You try and I'll beat you at your own game.
Is that a threat, George, huh?
That's a threat, Martha.
You're going to get it, baby.
Be careful, Martha. I'll rip you to pieces.
You are not man enough. You haven't the guts.
When the movie opened locally, there was a big scandal about its language. Albie grew up in the lap of luxury, but rebelled. He was abandoned by his biological parents and adopted at the age of 2 weeks by Reed Albie, son of the millionaire Edward Franklin Albie. He clashed particularly with his strong-minded adoptive mother, who wanted to make him a member of the New York society set. She never succeeded. Now, the play that I really want somebody to do locally is Three Tall Women, which won him his third Pulitzer Prize and was about his feud with his mother. But maybe the scariest thing Albie said was, quote, "Everything eventually is too late." Think about it. Albie said he was going to keep writing until he was 90 or gaga, whichever came first. He almost did. He died this week at age 88. His death leaves us waiting for the next great American playwright. It may be a long wait.
I dislike the concept of dying very much because one won't be around anymore. Being alive is an extraordinary experience, no matter how painful it can be from time to time. And I think the people who waste it, waste consciousness by not participating in it fully and hiding from it, are wasting one of the most valuable thing you can possibly have.
I would say there's a lot of disliking the concept of death out there. I'm just going to say that.
I'm thinking it's not popular.
It's not popular. Exactly so. Jim Orban, I want to let everybody know that if you are interested in the horticulture program at TCC, you log on to tcc.edu, super easy, mm-hmm. and then just put the word horticulture in there. You'll be taken right there. But I will tell you, if you get a chance to come out here on October 15th, the roses full bloom.
I wonder why they call it roses and beer, right?
There we go. There we go. Yeah. Well, we were focused on the beer today.
Yeah, we were.
So we should probably talk a little bit about the roses.
Yes, and a lot of folks want to know how to properly prune roses. And they're going to actually do live demonstrations on mm-hmm. how to properly prune. Now, realize that these have been pruned throughout the growing season. So they're going to probably have all, you know, yours aren't going to look like theirs are. But yes, you're going to learn those techniques. Quarter of an inch above the bud mm-hmm. at a 45 degree angle. You want to open the center up. You know, there's that little mini lesson going on, huh?
Right there.
How
right there.
That?
Walk and talk.
Walk and
tours,
talk.
And
yeah.
they're going to be, you're going to really learn the secrets of what makes this a glorious rose garden, which right now is really in its peak and will continue
and
to
usually,
be on October 15th.
You know, these are great because when they're looking really good, you can get all the scents, you can get the what the colors are, the true shades, and then you can start
and so such
feverishly
a lot of
writing down what you want to put into your garden.
Yeah, you know, I gotta tell you, I have low expectations, so I would not attempt that in my own garden. I'd just come out here, right?
But you can always like, you know, and say,
yeah, of course.
Well, I remember when I grew my Lady Banks rose.
That is, let me tell you something. That whole sentence, never going to happen to me. You know what is happening right now? The holiday lights are getting strung up here. Can you believe that at the Norfolk Botanical Garden? That's happening right now. So do come out and check out the roses. Do come out and check out the beer. It's October 15th or in the
meantime. Visit this garden. Bring
Visit
your bicycle.
Visit this garden. Absolutely. Jim Orban, thank you so much for being
Great
with
to
us
be
today.
Here.
Thank you to our studio audience.
You bet. Thank you very much.
For being here today. We really appreciate
it.
Thanks to our great crew from WHRO, which was enormously helpful in setting
our guests,
all
our
of
specialists,
this up. All of our special guests.
Our monarch specialists.
Exactly.
Our hop specialists.
We had it going on today.
We
no
did.
Question about
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks for listening today, and have a great weekend, and we will see you right back here on Monday.